years ago, I was giving a shiur just before Pesach to our Talmidim, and we were learning on the Dinim of Pesach, and amongst the Talmidim there was a girl who, she wasn't Jewish yet, she was in the process of conversion and she was doing Gerus, but she had already for a few years been practicing everything and learnt a lot. She knew more than all the other Talmidim in the Shia put together. Whatever we touched on, she knew why we do this, why we do that. And then I came to the point when I said that if somebody needs to keep chometz in the house over, for some reason you need to keep chometz over Pesach, there is a way of doing it, that you go to the Rav, and the Rav, he sells your chometz on your behalf, etc., etc. And she said, oh, I never realized that you have to do it through the Rav. I knew you could sell chometz, but I thought you could sell it yourself. I've always, for the last few years, I've always just sold my own chometz, you know, to a chap in the office, and I never went to the Rav or anything like that. So I said, well, it's better to do it through the Rav, because the Rav knows how to do all the legalities, and he's got to explain it properly to the person who's buying the chometz. If you don't explain it, and they don't understand really what it's all about, and they think it's just some sort of a game, then it's not valid. So, but in an actual fact, if you do it yourself, if you do it properly, I mean, if this chap in the office understands exactly what it's all about, and you've explained it to him, I suppose then it's okay. And she said, oh yes, yeah, he knows all about it, because he's Jewish himself, and so he knows all about it. And I thought to myself, my goodness me, you know, here is this goiter for the last few years, she's been selling a chometz to a yid in the office. So I said, but that's no good, he's not allowed to have chometz either. And she said, yes, but you know, he told me he's not Orthodox. I said, look, it makes no difference whether he's Orthodox or not, he is not allowed to have chometz. She said, well, I've thought about that, and I put it to him, because he said, no, don't worry, you know, it's okay with me, and you know, I don't mind. I thought, this is ridiculous, you know, I've got to put a stop to this. And I said, look, it doesn't make the slightest difference whether he's Orthodox or whether he's not Orthodox, whether he minds or whether he doesn't mind, he is not allowed to have chometz. He's doing a sin if he has chometz. And what's more, you're doing a big sin by selling it to him. There's a sin called lifnei evil ha'aseh mitzvah, you mustn't put a stumbling block and cause somebody else to sin, and that's a very big sin that you're doing, to cause somebody else to sin. That's a huge, you know, I really put the wind up. I thought, I've got to stop it somehow or other. And she said, you know, you're quite right, I never looked at him that way, you know, you're saying. I said, of course, you're aiding and abetting a crime, really, that's what it amounts to. And she said, you're quite right, you know, I'll tell him tomorrow morning, I'll tell him, you know, I'm stopping it, I'm not going to sell him the chometz anymore. And, you know, next day, next morning, she went to the seller and she said, you know, David, you know, my rabbi said that I can't sell you the chometz anymore because you're not supposed to have it. And I tell you, the seller, he went livid. He was furious. Even a funny people. Yeah, so really a funny people. And he went, he says, you tell your rabbi, you know, to mind his own big business. You know, these rabbis are all the same, they're always sticking their nose into other people's affairs. You know, what I do, that's my concern, and, you know, it's nobody else's business what I do. I'm happy to have it. Nobody else has got anything to say in it. And she stuck to her guns and she said, yeah, you're quite right. What you do is your business, but what I do is my business. And I don't want to be guilty of a big sin of having caused you to stumble. He was absolutely livid about it. Indeed, it's funny, you know, how he didn't feel, you know, he felt that he'd been demoted. He'd been disqualified from buying the chometz. Anyway, I was glad at least that we had that out of the way. But I had a little bit of a conscience about it. I felt a little bit dishonest because I knew that, you know, since she's not Jewish, she doesn't have a mitzvah of listening either. It's not one of the Sheva mitzvahs, Brei Noach. But I thought, look, I've got to put the wind up her and just tell her whatever it is. Anything that stops at the ends justify the means. And I was happy that it worked. But as I say, I had this little feeling that I was a little bit of a charlatan doing this. And then a few weeks later, another girl, in the same situation, she was also doing conversion, and she was very from keeping everything, dabbling every day. And she came to me once and she said, Rabbi Freilich, you know, when I dabble in the morning, and I say, brochers, do I say the bracha Shalaya Sani Goy? And I laughed, you know, I thought it was a funny thing. I remember Joey Greenfeld just happened to come into my house at that time, and I said, you know, we've got a problem, what do you think? And he also laughed. It was a funny question. Does she say Shalaya Sani Goy? You know, because she's still a Goy at the moment. So I thought about it, and I discussed it with Yitzhak Berger, a good friend, Diane Berger, and I said to him, you think she should say this bracha of Shalaya Sani Goy? And he said, of course you should say it. And I said, but it doesn't make any sense. He said, of course it doesn't make any sense. Whatever she does doesn't make any sense. And I thought about it and I said, of course it's quite right. When she says, a shaggy the shaman to stomach to one Alice, he lets you die. Does that make sense? Hakadosh Baruch Hu commanded her to wash her hands. You know, she hasn't been with sort of anything. Whatever she's done is just a rehearsal for what she's going to have to do later on after she's converted, that she'll have to wash her hands, she'll do all the mitzvahs. At the moment, it's just a beget chinuch. So, in the same way as she has to have chinuch for chometz and matz and all the dinim, so she has to practice keeping lifnei iver. What's the difference? So, when she later on, when she'll be converted, she'll be Jewish. Then of course she won't be able to sell her chometz to the staff of the office because she's had to be over this neighbor, so she's got to practice it now, and therefore, you know, I felt my conscience was at an ease. Now, what is takedin of a goy when it comes to being mashil somebody else? Well, as you said, there is no mitzvah of this neighbor. It's not one of the shavah mitzvahs b'nei noyach. And so this has got some interesting repercussions. We know that if I give something to a goy which is also to him, like we had, if I give Eva min a chai to B'nai Noach, something that he's not allowed to have, or and at times you have the pagan festivals, Lifnei Yom Edom, and they used to sacrifice a lot of animals to their pagan deities. So Chazal said that it's also to sell them for the land for a few days before their Yom Tovim. You're not allowed to sell them animals, because the animals are sure they're going to use them to sacrifice to their deities, and you're mashing the goy in Avodah Zorah. Right? So I'm not allowed, it's an issue for me, to be mashing a goy to do an Avodah, something which is for him an Avodah. But if I sell a behemoth before their Yom Tov, if I sell the behemoth to a cattle dealer, and I know that he's not going to use this behemoth for Avodah Zorah, either he doesn't do it, or he has his own behemoth, these behemoths which I'm selling him, this is purely for commercial purposes, he's going to sell it to a second goy. So now I am instrumental, I'm providing a behemoth, not for him, but for the second goy. So on that, the Gemara says that's not also. That's completely mutter, because it says lifnei iver lo titen mishael, and this is a lady called lifnei de lifnei. It's already a further stage. I'm putting it before the first goy. He's going to put it before the second goy. That's lifnei de lifnei, and lifnei de lifnei is mutter. So I can sell animals to a cattle dealer, who I know that he's going to sell it further to a goy, because the goy is going to do a void of dollar, that's lifnei, the lifnei as far as I'm concerned. However, if this cattle dealer is a yid, and I know he's a Yiddish cattle dealer who's not very scrupulous, he doesn't keep the dinim, and he sells before the Yom Edom, he does a terrific trade, he's selling the animals, hundreds of them all coming to him, and he's doing, you know, you can't stop him. So if I, the farmer, I supply animals to this yid, who's going to then sell it onto goyim to do the avodah zorah, right? Then that's also for me to do. Why? It's still lifnei de lifnei as far as the last goy is concerned, the one who's doing avodah zorah. It's still lifnei de lifnei. I'm not giving it to him. I'm only giving it to the Yiddish cattle dealer. But the point is this: that the cattle dealer is not allowed to sell it to the goy, and the cattle dealer's oiver the issue of lifnei iver by selling it to the goy. And therefore, if I sell it to the yid, I'm oiver lifnei iver, because I mashil him on the issue of lifnei iver. What's the difference whether I mashil him in the issue of Shabbos, or in the issue of Hazar, or in the issue of lifnei iver? So I mashil the cattle dealer in doing lifnei iver by selling it further on to the goy. Right? So if I sell it to a goy who's going to, if I sell it to a yid who's going to sell it to a goy, then I'm over lifnei eber. Right? Now, if I sell something to a goy, and I know that he's going to sell it further to a yid, something also, let's say a garment with chatnis in it or something like that, I sell it to him, and I know he will definitely sell it on to a yid, right? Then I'm not allowed to do that. If the final person is a yid, I'm not allowed to do that. Even though it's not lifnei eber, because as far as lifnei eber is concerned, it's still lifnei de lifnei. But I'm responsible for every yid. You know, I'm a chuyev, I'm a deraisa, I'm a debonah, you have free shower me is surah. I see a yid, anywhere if I see a yid being mechalel Shabbos, I should go up to him and I should try to stop him. That's what it's all about. You've got to be kid of the chaykin. You know, you see any yidin who don't do what they should be doing. So we should do everything to be responsible, call you so the raven bell is up, and the Christ for any yid to do my best that he shouldn't be over. So therefore, certainly, I shouldn't provide the means for him to do an isser, I should be mafish him. So it's not as listener either, but my responsibility for every yid as call you so a raven bell is there. So therefore, we've got now, if I sell it to a goy, he's not going to do an issa, is it? He's got no issa shatnis, but he's going to sell this beggar to a yid. Then I've got this issa of a ravus that I'm responsible to be mafresh every yid from issa. If I know that I'm selling something to a goy, which he's only going to sell to another goy, the behemoth before him, then I'm not responsible at all. It's not lifnei either, because it's lifnei de lifnei. And as far as moral obligation concerned, to be mafresh misura, it's called Yisola Reim Zel is there. I'm not responsible for every person in the world. I can't be the whole world moral, spiritual policeman. That's too much to expect of me. For a yid, I should do whatever I can to minimize the issa. But if a goy somewhere in Africa is doing an issa, you know, I can't be held responsible for that. Right? So therefore, those are the different madrigas. If I sell it to a yid who's going to sell to a goy, right? I'm either because I'm being mashil the yid and lifnei either. If I sell it to a goy, who's going to sell it to a goy? I'm not either anything, because I'm not machshil the goy, because the goy is allowed to sell a behemoth to another goy, because he hasn't got the mitzvah of lifnei either. And also, I'm not responsible for the final goy, because I feel like lifnei as far as I'm concerned. But if I sell it to a goy, who's going to sell it to a yid, then I've got this responsibility of a rebus. So that broadly is the situation as far as goyim are concerned. Now let's move on to a further point, and this has got a lot of applications in modern life. We know that the moral says, the Mishnah says, that if somebody lends money for interest, for ribis, right, then the malve is doing an iser by lending the money for ribis, and the loive is doing an aveda by borrowing money. Right? The malve is doing it. The Issa al Tikach me tari neshek or maribis, and the apostle goes, you mustn't take ribis from him. And the loiver, he's got an aveda called loisashin. You mustn't, don't let yourself get stung, so to say, don't let yourself get bitten. Loisashin. So the loiver's got an Issa, and the malver's got an Issa. Yeah. On top of that, there's a Mishnah that when he lends the money, then the malver is oiver lifnei either, because he's mashil the loiver in his iser, and the loiver is oiver lifnei either in being mashil the malver in his iser. Now, this is all when you've got ribis the raisa, proper ribis minatoya. But if such a thing as ribis the rabbonon, or a vax ribis as it's sometimes called. Now this is, for example, imagine I've got a property and it's empty. There's nobody living there, and I don't want to let it out at the moment. For the moment, for the next year or so, I have no intention of letting it out. I want to just keep it as it is. Now, I need to borrow some money, and I go to a moneylender, a Yiddish moneylender, and I say to him, listen, I want to borrow so much money from you. I can't pay you any interest. I have got no, and I can't afford to pay interest, and I don't want to pay interest. But you know something? I've got a property that's empty, right? I can make an arrangement with you that as long as I've got this loan, till I repay the money, you can live in my empty property. Or I know you've got a son who's getting married, he needs looking for a place, you know, you can let your son live in my empty property will be at your disposal and you can have accommodation there. Now, we know ribbis doesn't need to be money. I can give you food, I can give you services, I can give you ribbis in any form. If you have any benefit from lending me the money, so that is ribbis. Right? So in this case, where I say I'm not going to pay you any money, but I let you live in my property free of charge, is that ribbis? The answer is, it's not ribbis. Not ribbis min ha-toyra. Why not? Because the Torah says, "Atikach me'toyra neshech u'marbis." Ribbis has got to be neshech u'marbis. Marbis means that you're increasing the assets of the malveh, he's raking in, he's getting benefits from lending the money. And nesher means it's biting, right? When you take interest of somebody, a poor chap, he needs a loan, and on top of that, you're taking interest, he can hardly repay the loan, on top of that, you're taking interest out, so you're biting into him, that is nesher. The poor loiver, he's getting bitten out of. Now here, in this case, it's an interesting situation. It's marbis, the malveh is getting benefit because he's getting free accommodation in my property, but to me, it's not nesher. I'm not losing anything because this property, you know, this is kind of adra, that means it's a property which I want to let and I would advertise and I would get tenants and I would get rent. Then of course, if I let you live in it, you know, then I'm losing. But if I've decided I do not want to rent this property, I'm not going to get any rent, I won't get one penny from this property for the next year or so. So then, if I let you live on my property, I've lost nothing. So therefore, as far as I'm concerned, it's not nesher. And therefore, since it's not nesher, there is no issur of ribbis min ha-toyra. However, mid-rabbonon, you can imagine, you know, rabbonon said, look, this looks very much like ribbis. I mean, he's lending money and he's getting free accommodation, he's getting something for it. It looks very, very much like ribbis. And so, as the Chachamim often do, when you've got something which is mutter, but it looks very much like something which is also going to make a gezeira, you mustn't do it. So they made a gezeira that this is ribbis rabbonon, and the malveh is not allowed to lend me the money on these conditions. However, the Chachamim only made it an issur for the malveh. That he's got sort of an issa of lending money for ribbis to rabbonon. But the loiver is not doing any issa. The loiver is not oiver like tashir. And you can understand it. For the malveh, looking at it from the standpoint of the malveh, to him it's very much like any ribbis. He's lending money and he's getting benefits. From the loiver's point of view, it doesn't look like ribbis at all. It's not that he's giving something that looks like he's not giving anything. He hasn't given a penny. He's getting a loan. Free, it's an interest-free loan. He's living in his house, it doesn't cost him a penny. So as far as the loiver is concerned, the loiver is not oiver the aveira of loiv tashir. So the Rosh on this Gemara in Bom Metzin, is a nesher, where he's with all the dinim of ribbis. So the Rosh says that although the loiver is not oiver if he does this loan, and he borrows this money on this condition, although the loiver is not either on life sashir, but he's either on lifnei iver, because he's being mashil the malveh in doing his issa. The malveh is not allowed to lend it. It's an issa rabbonon on the malveh to lend it. So I'm mashil, says the Rosh, I'm mashil the malveh in the issa rabbonon of lending me money for the issa rabbonon. Right? Now that stam, as an aside, is interesting because we see that the oiver lifnei iver, it could be even large lifnei iver, because I mashed somebody on an issur rabbonon. Maybe we'll discuss that some other time, I don't think we'll have time for that today. But at any rate, this is what the Rosh says. So the Teferet Shemuel at the bottom of the Rosh, he points out, you know, he says, listen, we thought that it's okay for the loiver, he's not doing any issur. And now he's saying, yeah, he's not oiver like sashir, but he's oiver lifnei iver. So what's the difference? He's oiver that, and he's still an aveira, what's he gained, you know, from this whole business. So the Tver Shmuel says it can make a big difference. Because if the malveh You know, the man is a money lender. This is what he makes his livelihood from. And he lends money with interest. You know, he's not from either. He lends money the whole time in interest. Right? And he's got plenty of other customers who want to borrow his money. Right? And if I don't borrow this money, then he will lend the money to other people. So in that case, I'm not either listener either. Because I'm not causing him to do an avail, to sin by lending me the money. Because without me, he would lend the money in any case. He would have plenty of other customers to lend the money to. Now normally you remember we said that if a person could do the avail without me, but nevertheless, I'm now aiding and abetting him, it's still an avail and rabbonon of misayel de oivrei avail. But he says that the Be'er Shmuel, it's possible that here I'm not over anything, because if he lends the money to anybody else apart from me and gets proper interest, he'll be over an Issa Daraisa of lending money for Ribi. If I borrow the money from him, so he's only over an Issa Rabbonon when he lends me the money for Ribi. So therefore, I'm doing him a good service. It sounds a bit funny, but when you think about it, it's very logical. The Torah says, I mustn't be makshil somebody, I mustn't cause somebody to stumble, I mustn't be instrumental in causing somebody to do an avada. Here, I'm not being makshil him in anything. It's not that I'm makshil him in a little instance, but I am not being makshil him, I'm saving him. Without me, he would be doing a much bigger issa. So what I'm doing by telling him to do just an issa d'bonon, don't do an issa d'ar, do an issa d'bonon, I'm saving him from doing an issa d'araisa, said the Be'er Shmuel. And, it says, furthermore, I'm doing another good deed. Not only am I saving the malveh from lending to the other person, that other person, that other borrower, who would be also oivan issa d'araisa, I'm saving him, right? If he lends me the money, he hasn't got the money to lend him. So I'm saving the malveh from lending this sum of money, whatever sum of money I'm borrowing, he might have other money, but that's a separate issa. But the money which is lending to me, he can't lend to the other person. So I'm saving the malveh from an issa d'araisa, and I'm saving the other borrower from an issa altogether. So I'm a good chap. So he says, in that case, you know, extra that I'm not either anything at all, I'm not either listener, even at Messiah, nothing at all. Now this is a very interesting concept. As once we go along this line, then this opens up lots of possibilities. And you know, I've often thought along these lines myself. Not that if I invite Father Shuga, something the first time and you invite them, you want to get them interested in Yiddishkeit. Yeah, there's nothing better than inviting them a nice Friday night and to see the children and to meet us and the whole atmosphere makes a tremendous roshim. They see that, and then so I can invite them. So where do they live? Maybe they live in Swiss Cottage, or live maybe a little bit further even. And you know, they probably come by car. So the question is, can I say come to us a Friday night if I know that they're going to come by car, and I'm guiding them that they'll be Mechalel Shabbos? And I often sort of taken the line that, look, if I wouldn't invite them, what would they do? They'd sit at home. There'd be Mechalel Shabbos much more at home. For 5 hours, or however long they're at home, somebody who doesn't keep Shabbos is Mechalel Shabbos mamish every minute. You're switching on the television, you're switching on the light, you're on the phone, you're writing. There's so many malachas to do, you're making yourself a cup of tea. While he's at home, you know, he'd be Mechalel Shabbos all the time. He'd probably be eating trefils for supper and everything. You know, if I just come to me, I know that for 5 hours I've got him sitting here in my house on a nice Friday night, and he's not being Mechalel Shabbos while he's here, he's not eating trefils, everything is kosher, he's seeing Divrei Torah, he's making a big roshim, and he's getting all good things, you know. So even if he comes by car, I haven't been makshil him, I've saved him from doing an aveda. I've reduced it. So I always sort of used to take this line, and I sort of added to it sort of an extra little sniff that I made sure I didn't invite people from 20 miles away where I was literally forcing them to come by car. I invited them from Swiss Cottage, so in an hour, you know, you could walk, or somewhere 40 minutes, you know, you could walk. So it's not impossible to walk. So I would say, listen,
It's not my business. As far as I'm concerned, they're walking. I'm not going to look to see how they've arrived. I'm not going to ask them any questions. I'm not going to see whether they parked the car around the corner. And I'm just here to sing some meters with them and to tell them nice toilet for Friday night. And so that sort of combination of not forcing them to do, not actually telling them to be Machalic Shabbos, telling them which they might be Machalic Shabbos, and even if they are, if the worst comes to the worst, the Machalic Shabbos, so okay, there would be much more Machalic Shabbos without me. I'm not afraid of a masculine. And I remember one, I had a girl, a Jewish girl, she was a doctor in the Royal Free. And she came to us and she started becoming frum and she was keeping Shabbos, everything. But of course, you know, you're a doctor and you have your rota, your daisy, you have to work on Shabbos. And she said, you know, I'm not very happy, you know, about, you know, having to work on Shabbos. You know, I wish, you know, I wouldn't have to work on Shabbos. And I said to her, well, you know, maybe you could go to the administrators and say, look, you're prepared to work every Sunday. There's a lot of doctors who would like to have Sunday off to be with their families, to go out in the Sunday afternoon. Now, say you're prepared to come in every Sunday and to work every Sunday, you know, but in exchange for having Shabbos off. Oh, it's a good idea. So she went to the administrators and they said, listen, it's okay with us, but you know, we haven't got the time to start looking for, and if you find a doctor who's prepared to change with you, you know, and tell us, and we put his name down, you know, and fine. So she asked a few doctors, but nobody was willing to do the exchange. Then one day, suddenly the administrator called her in and said, you know something, you asked us a few weeks ago about this idea of changing. We were looking around a little bit for you, and we asked a particular doctor, you know, would he mind doing this? And he was delighted. He said, yeah, I'd love to be off every Sunday. You know, I hate having to come in on a Sunday. I want to be with my family. Yeah, I'll come in every Saturday. And as long as I know I've got Sunday off. So you're from now on, you know, you're free. You're free. You don't need to come in on Saturday anymore. You come in every Sunday. Well, you've guessed it, you know. When she asked what's the name of the doctor, just said, no, you know, it's Dr. Levy, you know. And, you know, so she had a very sort of bad feeling. You know, here am I, you know, I'm making him work for me on Shabbos. And again, you know, I said to her, I said, well, first of all, you know, if he wouldn't be working on Shabbos, if he'd be at home on Shabbos, he'd be probably doing many more avedas on Shabbos. In the hospital, it's still relatively few avedas that you do on the Teheta, for many of the avedas, and many things are only mitrabonon, and many things are mutter for choylent. So he'd be probably worse off. You're not really mashing him. And then besides that, you haven't asked him, if you say, please, will you come in on Shabbos, you know, instead of me, you know, that would be a bit distasteful. But you didn't ask him, so happened the administration asked him, you know, and would you want to be off every Sunday? And he jumped out and he was happy, so they made an arrangement with him. That's got nothing to do with you, and you don't need to worry about that. So this is the sort of a thing, and in fact I found it more or less Mufurish, a similar case in the Igros Moshe, where it also says that the Jewish doctors, if they put their name down, and they say that they are on the rota, you know, they would like to work every Sunday. The fact that they know that the administration is going to then have to rope in somebody else to work for them on Shabbos, you don't need to worry about that. A, that probably the person who they will rope in for Shabbos is probably a goy, because after all, roiv, the vast majority of doctors are not Jewish. You know, it's probably a goy. And it says, even if it's a Jew who doesn't mind coming in on Shabbos, we have this in Emerson, you know, you said at the back of your mind you have this, that he's probably doing much more avedas at home than here. And therefore, you know, that's a sort of an ache for Jewish doctors in a hospital. If they can make this arrangement, then it's okay. Now, he did say, and somebody once asked me about this a few weeks ago, that in one of the tshuvas, he said there was some rabbi in America who wanted to start off some activity on the Shabbos, and he would get all the children, was it you that he would get all the children, encourage the children they should come, and they'd get prizes, and he would learn with them, and they'd learn about the Seder, and they would daven and all that. It would be a marvelous thing. He wants to execute that, but the children are coming from 30, 40 miles around. It definitely, they would come by car, you know, is he allowed to do this? And Reb Moshe was very against it.
And he says, no, you can't do that. You want to educate them, you want to teach them things on Shabbos. What are you teaching them? You're teaching them to be Mechal on Shabbos. You know, you can't do that. Now, you know, I thought you could even say the same argument. It's not even listening either. You leave them at home, you know, they'll go to Blank Cross, they'll go whatever else they go to. I discussed it with David Feinstein when I was in America a few months ago. And he said, it's not a matter of listener either. He's a question of that this wrong is now instituting a thing in the shoes, a common, that you're really, it's like announcing, you're giving them a heter. Yeah, they're coming to, they're being given a heter, they're being told, listen, if you come to synagogue, to come for coming to the synagogue, it's allowed to do it on Shabbos. And they come away with that sort of heter. So it's not a question of listener either, if you're guiding them. It's if you're almost announcing, it's okay, come every Shabbos, and it's a done thing, they remember for their whole life. Yeah, going back hard to shul and Shabbos is not bad. We used to do it, Rabbi so-and-so was there, we were all coming, we saw us coming into the car park, coming, going, and never mind it. And therefore you're sending the wrong message. But the thing is, in the hospital you make an arrangement with the doctor, you know, you feel that you're indirectly there, you haven't taught the doctor anything, that's a completely different case. Now, set up David, so I will say to my Talmidim who I invite for Shabbos, and say, look, you know, we don't drive on Shabbos, you're not supposed to drive on Shabbos, but, you know, as far as I'm concerned, you're walking here, it takes you 40 minutes, an hour to walk, I'm not going to ask you how you've come, and I'm not going to check in, it's none of my business, but, you know, we're happy to see you on Shabbos. So, I've made my point that he doesn't ever think, well, I'm besides, never said anything, he doesn't mind, but at the same time, you know, I don't feel that I've been going them anything because they would have been far more at home. I've been going them, I've been mastering them.